Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
So you join us for another Need to Know podcast. My name, as usual, is Robert Crane, and joined by my co-host again, Brenton Johnson. Welcome along.
Good to be back, Robert.
So we're back for another episode. We do have an interview with a CIA Ops patron, Mia McIntyre, talking about some of the experiences she had at the recent SharePoint conference in Las Vegas and some general thoughts around SharePoint and other points. So we don't need to spend a lot of time carrying on, but we will give you some updated features and announcements from the Microsoft Cloud. And I think probably the number one feature that we can talk about now that has been brought to Microsoft 365 Business is conditional access. So conditional access is now part of Microsoft 365 Business, and it basically allows you to put conditions around things like users, apps, and devices, how it connects to the ecosystem, and then taking actions to, again, either block users or prevent them having, making them do MFA or taking all these actions. So this has been a highly requested feature that's now in the product. It's really great to see Microsoft 365 Business continue to add features. And this has been a big one, wouldn't you agree, Brenton?
Oh, yeah. I think this is one of the hero products of the Microsoft stack that no one really knows much about. So to give you a bit of an idea, say you walk into a customer and you say, okay, you all need to go to 2FA, and they go, oh, it's too hard, I don't want all this. What you can do with conditional access is you can whitelist their IP. So if they're inside of the firewall, inside of the office, you can say no 2FA required. When they leave the office, or they're overseas, or they're suspicious, or they're logging in from a device that's not compliant, or there's some sort of suspicious behavior, you might prompt for 2FA. You might completely block that behavior. You might say, no, you must be on a compliant device in order to log in, et cetera, et cetera. So it gives an insane amount of customization and protection to your tenant. But no one's really doing much with it. I think it's in the P1 SKU normally. So you do need to have Azure Active Directory P1. But now with this moving into Microsoft 365 Business, I think that has just made it the no-brainer SKU for anyone rolling out. That's your new default business premium for your small business customers. Would you agree with that, Robert?
Look, I think it's got now so many features in it, including, I think the important one is device management. So you can manage your iOS, your Android, your iPad, where a lot of corporate data now exists. It also gives you a number of policies to make it easy to be more secure. And again, it's basically something that's constantly adding features improvements. So over the time, we've seen it add things like Office 365 ATP, two-way password synchronization. And again, I think, like you said, it's becoming the go-to SKU. It really looks to me, again, my guess would be, again, this is just speculation on my part, is that we will see a Microsoft 365 Business offering and a single Microsoft 365 Enterprise offering. So I can't see that we're going to have multiple enterprise SKUs down the track, because the Microsoft 365 Business SKU is now so much better value than the current Microsoft 365 E1 Enterprise license. So that's the way I think it's going to go. And it's good, because I think that makes it simpler for everybody, and we can keep seeing more features added into our Microsoft 365 Business. And again, in essence, that's a combination of Office 365 EMS plus the Windows on the desktop as well. So lots and lots of really good stuff, lots and lots of stuff to make your environments more secure, lock things down, provide things like conditional access and Office 365 ATP around security. So if you haven't looked at it, spend some time having a look at Microsoft 365 Business, I would suggest.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
It's good. I think we'll see. Hopefully we'll get more interviews and we'll get more people talking about it. We've done some recent episodes on it. So hopefully the word's out there and people are beginning to have a look at it. And the good thing from a reseller's point of view is it's more things that need configuring, setting up, that you can help your customers become secure and also generate some more revenue. But you do need to obviously sit down and learn these sort of products, because typically our general implementation is around just the standard business premium. So I think people need to extend themselves and start looking at this product and also getting up to speed with what it can do and how to configure it. What else have we got that we can bring people up to date with, Brent?
Well, I can talk about a little bit about what happened when I blocked Legacy Auth on my tenant. So I've had 2FA enforced on my tenant for as long as I can remember. I don't know when I turned it on, but it was a long time ago. You know, I'm a big advocate of 2FA, big advocate of security, but I decided to go in there into conditional access and turn on the block legacy authentication thing. So as Robert's explained to me, it works a bit like a firewall. It doesn't turn off the protocol. It just blocks access to that protocol. And what I found is a lot of stuff broke. So it basically threw back an error on all my connections that was saying you've implemented two-factor auth or you've implemented something like that and you need to log in again. So I had things like my billing system that I was using, which I was actually using Legacy Auth to send emails through. It was, you know, encrypted, secure, etc., but it was using a authentication protocol that's considered legacy. So that one was shut down, which was understandable. So I'll come up with a solution for that soon. Just going to use their mail server for the time being. What else do I have? I'd Flow stopped working. So Flow was working, but only on a couple of flows, but my other flows broke. So there was one where I get an email in, it turns that email into a PDF, and then it saves that PDF to OneDrive and then puts an entry in a spreadsheet to tell me what files just been saved. So that broke, and all I had to do was go in there, reconnect, and I didn't even have to sign in. It just reconnected. So I just had to do that for all my connections. So OneDrive, Excel Online, et cetera, et cetera. And my HubSpot connection broke as well, which I haven't looked at that because I don't really care too much, but I assume that's probably something to do with the way that token was created, if it is tokenized. Makes me wonder if it is now. So these things happen. So when you go about turning on these things, I suppose you've got to have a bit of an awareness of what might happen. You know, there's users out there doing all sorts of stuff with their Office 365 account. There's very little controls in place to prevent them from adding these sorts of things. So you've got to be able to say, okay, well, here's what could potentially break. And here's our plan for mitigating that. And maybe some of these things can't be fixed. And then you've got to make a decision on whether you sign off on the risk or whether you move to something different or you just completely stop using that. So, yeah, so it was an interesting experience for me. I was quite surprised, actually.
Well, I think the thing is that, again, in a move to make things more secure, we want to make sure we have the modern authentication and typically only the modern authentication enabled in our environments. A lot of legacy applications support these older protocols like POP, IMAP. And again, they can be a vulnerability because it allows basically what's called spray attacks to constantly throw passwords at this. So disabling legacy auth will potentially cause these sort of issues because, again, in many cases, applications are using these older ways of methods of connecting, and it's obviously an easier way to connect. But again, updating to modern auth will make sure that you are more secure. But things like what I see the most commonly is around third-party backups. So most third-party backups of Office 365 are a challenge because, one, they have a standing global admin access to the tenant, and also they use legacy auth, which means somebody from the outside can keep throwing passwords at it till they guess it. So again, not a good thing. So two sides of it is, yes, legacy auth, removing that makes you more secure, but will tend to break things and you can be very surprised as to what it breaks. Again, all the modern Office 365 stuff, so Office 2016, all of that stuff does support modern auth and may just require a login if you do eliminate the older one. But some of things like third-party Office 365 backups may indeed stop working, and you may need to craft a unique policy. So again, just be careful about that, and we'll put some links in the show notes to help you work through that. So again, just be careful, understand what's connecting to it, and again, approach it with care as you should with all security options there. So again, unfortunately, it's something sometimes a hard lesson that people learn, but again, glad to see that, Brenton was able to work through it. And now you've got a more secure tenant, haven't you, Brenton?
Well, yeah, it's good. It's a good customer story. I can go out and talk to people about and go, I'm doing things in my business that are breaking my business as well. Security isn't always sexy, as you might think. It's the hard parts of security are the stuff that you don't see, the problems that it causes. You know, I was having an argument with someone the other day who told me the best practice isn't to patch anything. Now, you don't bother patching switches or stuff to the new firmware because, you know, it's less stable or whatever. I said, well, you know, why do they release firmware updates if they don't do anything? But, you know, I can sort of see their point. If it's working, don't mess with it. But then that's not a very secure way of operating or secure mindset. So, yes, okay, I'm going to put in conditional access, firewall rule, so to speak, block access to those legacy authentication, and then suffer the consequences of that. But also in the process, understand a little bit more about my risk profile and what I need to be doing differently.
Yeah, I think, again, it's a learning process. And again, it is something that does need to be secured in the long run. We just have to make sure that, unfortunately, these things can have, affect a lot of things that are connected to our tenants. We just need to be a bit wary about that. Not too difficult, but the main thing is to go in there with a bit of awareness. And again, the documentation is there. There is the ability to turn these things off and customize them. So all of that is possible. We just need to spend a bit of time reading the documentation, and we'll make sure that a link to that documentation is in the show notes for people to browse. And of course, then they can contact Brenton with all their issues on how to resolve it, given now that he is an expert on breaking basic authentication. So one of the other things that I thought was worthwhile talking about was this new SharePoint starter kit. So again, one of the things we see with SharePoint is that people look at it and say, oh, it's not pretty enough, it hasn't got enough widgets, it doesn't do enough things. Well, Microsoft basically now has a SharePoint online provisioning service that you can go in and basically one click install a number of templates into your tenant to then go in and modify and play with. So again, I've got a document there how to set that up and the website to go and have a look at. Again, if you're doing SharePoint or you're looking to get a good base to start with and want some ideas, some suggestions, and something you can modify inside your tenant, go in and have a look at this link here, and then go in and spend a bit of time around this SharePoint online provisioning service. Just makes life a lot easier and gives you a nice looking SharePoint site quickly and easily without having to build the whole thing from scratch. Have you had a chance to look at these at all, Brenton?
Well, I haven't installed them in my tenant, but yeah, I had a bit of a look at the blog post that you wrote up here, Robin, and it's very cool. It adds a few different things. I think this is what's happening as we move towards more people being more comfortable with SharePoint. As SharePoint starts to mirror more what the World Wide Web looks like rather than a bespoke, intranet-y, ugly solution that it used to be, technical, weird solution, now it's just mirroring the internet, and it's becoming very accessible for end users. And now you start bringing in, well, here's the most accessed files, here's, there's all sorts of stuff. There's personal emails, personal tasks, stock information if you want to know what's happening in your company's stock. I did notice two of the CSPs have had quite significant growth this year. One in the order of well over 100%, another one in the order of 60%. So, there must be something about this Office 365 thing, Robert, that's taking off.
Yeah, everybody's migrating to Microsoft 365. That's what it is, and there's the upgrade cost to do it. So, but no, I think, again, we're seeing this tipping point and it's becoming more and more accepted. More people are moving to the cloud. We're reaching that tipping point. And again, a lot of customers don't want to have the worry of on-prem IT. So again, using Microsoft Cloud and what it provides as an integrated solution is probably the most cost-effective way to deliver it, so you can get on with your day-to-day job. So quickly, another couple of things that grabbed my attention was firstly, the to-do beta for the Mac has been released. So you can order, you can basically go into the iOS store on your Mac and download that now. So again, look out for the to-do beta app on macOS. You must admit that Microsoft is rolling these out very, very quickly across its full range of operating systems. So from the PC to iOS on the iPhone to Android to Mac, is doing a great job doing this. If you are a big to-do fan like I am and you are using a Mac, by all means go in and have a look at that and download that, ready to go. And I think the other one that I found was very interesting was that Microsoft now has the ability to new preview for Edge, the Chromium based version of Edge, is now available on Windows 7, 8 and 8.1. How about that, Brenton?
Oh, damn it. Okay, well, fair enough. I was wrong about that. I was hoping that they'd make it a Windows 10 exclusive, but obviously they're still trying to wean organizations off that, what I'll call legacy Windows. So, you know, support it. I suppose it supports it out of the box and they'd have to hard code something in to stop it being supported. But I'm a little bit upset about that. I can't lie about that, Robert.
Well, I think probably because Chrome itself still runs on 7 and Windows 8, that's probably why Chromium, the version of Edge, would need to do basically support the same thing. So in that respect, it sort of makes sense. I agree with you that it would be nice to make it only Windows 10, but you know, being the competitive market that we have in browsers today, and also they're going to give them the ability to say, you know, we're on more machines and, you know, we're as popular as every other browser out there. So I think from that point of view, it makes sense. And if it's a well-made product, and again, I think they're going to learn things from putting it on Windows 7 and 8, they may not learn from putting it on Windows 10 to make it a more secure product. So I think it's a positive, but I agree with you. In the long run, I would have liked to have seen it Windows 10. But the good news for you, Brenton, is that specifically on Windows 10, the new Windows Terminal Beta has now been available. So this is going to allow us to do a command prompt, a PowerShell, all this sort of stuff, basically in a nice Windows app. So again, think of this as replacing the traditional command line shell that you get, CMD, in a nice Windows Store app. So that's now available in beta. If you want to download that, have a play with it. Very, very basic to start off with. I just loaded it recently and had a bit of a quick play. Got to spend some more time on it. But again, the good thing for Mr. Brenton is that's a Windows 10 only software update. So there you go. Get that on your machine, Brenton.
Oh, and that comes with a huge amount of benefits too. You know, it can be more easily updated. It can be sandboxed. You know, it's talking about using that terminal app to, you can have tabs. So you can have one tab with command prompt, one tab with PowerShell, that sort of stuff. So it's quite a cool thing. And I think it's a great move in the right direction. I think a lot of devices are now getting things like PowerShell disabled out of the box as an OS hardening approach. So, you know, maybe you might have PowerShell disabled on the device, but you need some sort of terminal to connect to, you know, Office 365 to do whatever you do there. So I think this will be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what it actually turns out to. It looks like it's on GitHub, so I don't know if that means it's open source or not, but my argument would be it probably is. Would that be correct assumption?
Yep, that is correct. It is open source. At this point in time, if you wanted to, you know, get an EXE, a standalone EXE, you would need to compile it yourself and do that, and that's available. Microsoft's got instructions on that. I think there will be a standalone EXE coming shortly, but the one through the Windows Store is, like you said, probably the best way to keep it updated and also make it a bit easier distribution. And I think it's going to be a go-to tool for a lot of IT pros. So, for example, VS Code, Visual Studio Code, is becoming the go-to open source platform for, you know, connecting to GitHub and doing that sort of thing. I think Terminal is going to be another way to have multiple sessions open. So I'm certainly looking forward to it. So I can have, you know, multiple PowerShells and multiple command lines. And I think it's going to be a great little tool. Little way to go yet with its development, but things are very positive from what I've seen so far. What else we got?
Probably the only thing to mention there, Robert, you've got to have Windows 1903, version 1903, for it to be installed. So for everyone there still lagging on the old operating systems. You're going to have to upgrade.
I think that's the way of the world these days. So, again, like if you haven't got 1903, hopefully it's coming to your PC shortly. I've been running that for a while myself. Haven't had any dramas. All seems to work on mine and my family's machines. So I would recommend it. So if you need that, have a look for that in the Windows Store. We'll put a link in the show notes. Anything else before we call it quits and get on to our interview, Brendan?
No, I'm looking forward to this interview. I'll be listening to the podcast as soon as it comes out because I'll be very interested to hear what's so again, it about.
Excellent. So, again, we're going to have Mia McIntyre on. She's a CIOps patron. She, like I said, attended the recent SharePoint conference. So she's going to give us some feedback on that about SharePoint and a few other topics that we discussed during that time. So I recommend it as an interview for everybody to listen to. And without further delay, why don't we get right into that interview? So welcome along to a special chat for this podcast episode. I am joined by a CIA Ops patron member, Mia McIntyre, all the way from sunny Queensland. How are you going, Mia?
Hi, Robert. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. So Mia runs her own business, mivirtual.com.au. I'll get her to introduce the business and what she does before we launch into our special topic. So Mia, can you just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what your business is all about?
Sure thing. So basically, we just focus on successful Office 365 implementations. So a big element of that is around training in all the different applications. But we do have a heavy focus around the SharePoint and Teams environments as well. So lots of intranets, lots of document management solutions with a bit of fun functionality in there as well. So it's a very specific focus, but we find that if we do focus on that, then we can work with others that do the other side of things super well, and it's a great outcome for the client. So.
Yeah, so it's interesting your background. You haven't come from a technical background per se. You've obviously got into the SharePoint side of it. You're doing for a number of years. That's your specialty. But I suppose to give us a bit of context here, how did you sort of fall into the world of SharePoint?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Not technical at all. All my background's finance, in fact, and I actually worked for a management consulting firm that their model was completely officeless, so all online, and they had about 40-ish consultants, and the platform that they used to communicate and work together was, in fact, Office 365, SharePoint, and Skype, or Skype for Business. And so it was through that role that I had with them that I realized how powerful Office 365 was, and I sort of became a champion of the product and sort of worked with them for 2+ years and essentially became the SharePoint key person and learnt it back to front and did a lot of training, a lot of research, and then realized, yeah, that there was a huge niche in the market on helping other businesses utilize or optimize the value of the product. So my virtual business was born, and it's been an evolution ever since. And obviously I'm learning every day as well.
Well, speaking of that learning, you have done something that few people, at least here in Australia, get the opportunity to partake in, and that was to be front and centre at the recent SharePoint 2019 conference over there in Vegas. So what I thought our listeners would like to get some ideas on is a few things here, but let's start off with just the conference as a conference. What was it like to attend a really big, effectively, Microsoft conference? What was that like? Was that your first experience with a conference of this size?
Yeah, it was, absolutely. The only other thing similar was attending the tour that was back in February that was put on down in Sydney by Microsoft as well. And that was a really great experience. But yeah, this was a whole nother level, going to Vegas and being at the MGM Grand there and just having essentially the whole conference center assigned to a particular conference was huge, absolutely huge. I think I walked 5 kilometres on average around the conference during the days. So that just goes to show how huge it was.
So again, you know, was it too many people? Was it, could you get in the sessions that you want, the food, the drink? How was the sort of the logistics of it? Getting there, getting back? Was it, I suppose, something that you see as worthwhile? If I'm going to spend my hard-earned dollar to go over there and attend a conference, not the content, but, you know, how was it actually run as logistics-wise? Was that, you know, a good experience?
Yeah, overall it was. I thought the food, basically one of the challenges was the central hall where all the food and the sort of essentially break sessions were and the vendors was quite away from most of the session rooms. So you couldn't just sort of duck back there and get a snack or whatever. You really only could go there for the breakfast in the morning and the lunch. And that was it. You didn't really have time to go in and quickly grab snacks. And it's not like an Australian conference where they have coffee carts and stuff everywhere, of course, because coffee's a bit different there. So, yeah, I found that the interim sort of options were very lacking. But the main meals and all that sort of stuff was great. The rooms, the sessions, easy to get to, no issues sitting down and getting involved and getting into each sessions. But there were so many of them. So they basically ran two agendas for each day. So there was four sessions in every block, and they timed that by two. So you essentially had eight sessions to choose from at any one time. So it was a lot to try and find out, you know, do I get value from this? And because there were so many sessions, if you decided that you didn't like the one you're in, really by the time you got to the other one, it would have been almost over anyway, because it was there was just so many. So that's probably one of the challenges. But as a conference overall, it was great. It was fun and exciting and, yeah, good.
Excellent. So obviously you've paid a good dollar to travel from the land down under all the way to the wonderful world of Vegas. And you've gone there, obviously, to learn stuff for your business. How would you say that, you know, when you went over there, what were you looking to get out of the conference? Why did you sign up to go to SharePoint 2019 conference in the US?
I think it was probably just to get a jump start to see what was coming and to network, because I guess, you know, what I do is quite specific. It's always cool to meet businesses and do work internationally. So I have a couple of clients that I work with and an IT partner I work with in America already. So it was nice. And actually one of them came to the conference. So it was nice to have that connection and that catch up. So yeah, networking, I guess, is as a nice benefit, but yeah, really to get the cutting edge on what's going to be happening and the direction for most of the programs. And I know we get to read that and the summaries that are provided, and particularly, you know, with our Patreon network that you run, it's brilliant. So, you know, there's not a lot left over, I guess, but it's just being there and seeing them demo the new releases and feeling confident, I guess, in what they're actually saying and putting out in these releases and articles.
Excellent. All right. So tell us about the content there. What was something, or what were the things that really excited you that you really thought were eye-opening that you can take away and make money? You know, was there anything there, or was there a group of things that stood out in your mind that sort of made the whole trip worthwhile?
I would say a couple of the developer sessions, which essentially went over my head, but obviously we all know that modern SharePoint, or we may not all know, but modern SharePoint's not something you can just change or code or whatever. And you don't want to do that because you don't want to risk, you know, losing the ability to evolve with the product. But one of the things that I was pleasantly surprised by and excited by was some solutions around customizing headers for SharePoint, which is a big one that I get asked all the time, and also some footers, and then some additional cool features like, you know, alerts within pages and stuff like that, that sort of pop out like dialogue boxes. A couple of the things that we used to get in the classic SharePoint, but now can be applied to modern through PowerShell and PNP scripting. So as I say, yes, very technical, a bit over my head, but certainly it was great to see Microsoft developers talk about providing these solutions and packs in GitHub and a couple of other locations where they're, you know, accessible by developers. So that was nice to see, and they guaranteed that nothing that they put in there would essentially affect the evolution of SharePoint and be changed or impacted. So it was, I guess for me, knowing that that's there, that's a value add to my clients, because, you know, those were things that, that people asked for all the time. And I would not have got those connections or got those resources if I didn't attend the conference.
So speaking about that, networking is a big part of many of these conferences. Did you find that the networking was of value, even though that you've got a funny accent compared to many people over there, or was it international enough? Or how did you find the networking and all being SharePoint people sharing the same space? Were you able to make those connections that you were looking for?
Yeah, I was interested about that dynamic in general, because I thought I did attend, I think it was the Digital Workplace Conference last year here in Australia, and I realised that the people attending were really more my clients than, you know, colleagues or potential competitors, I guess. But this was a really big mix. So there were some people that were attending there as SharePoint champions on behalf of their organisations that had been sent along to learn because they were looking to implement. So I actually made quite a lot of connections of potential clients just from conversations. But then there were also obviously people that do what I do, or IT companies that were looking for more resources and skills. So, I mean, if I had my networking hat on 24/7, I probably would have been able to get a fair bit of business out of it. But I sort of had a combination of the learning and the networking. So it was a good balance. But, yeah, you could certainly get business out of it, I have no doubt.
So what was the commitment, the time commitment for you to go there? So how long were you away, or how long did it take, obviously, to get to the conference, attend the conference, maybe anything on either side of it? What sort of the time investment that someone would need to make if they wanted to, say, go next year?
Look, I would say a solid 7 days is probably what it would take, because obviously you lose a couple of days traveling back. So I tagged on an additional week, and I caught up with some of my clients and the IT partner in Berkeley. So I went essentially because the conference is 4 days, 3 full days, and then you've got 3 workshop days. So they're optional extras. So that was Sunday, Monday, and then the conference was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then there was a workshop day on the Friday. So then if you were to fly home, say, the following Saturday, by the time you got home, it would be the Monday morning. So, yeah, you would need a solid week, a solid 7 days. And then, you know, if you obviously wanted to tack some time on either side to have a bit of a relax, then you could do that. And, yeah, as I say, I stayed an extra full week after that to catch up with those other contacts over there. Cost-wise, I know you didn't ask for it, but, I mean, it is quite expensive. The exchange rate was horrendous. So essentially, I bought the ticket, I think, was on American $2,500 or more, plus a few extras if you wanted to. That converted to over $3,500, I think $3,700 or something. And then obviously you have your tickets, which are around about $1,000. You can get good deals. And then you've got your accommodation on top of that as well, which is about another $1,000 or $1,100. So it certainly does add up. And it was something that was on my bucket list. So it was a little bit of a, I guess, a nice to have. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's four or five days of solid learning if you take that opportunity, and potential business gathering as well. So, you know, I guess it is worth it, I would think.
Yeah, so that's sort of the next question is, the fact is, you know, do you think you'll be going back next year? And would you recommend that others think about attending as well, based on your experience?
Yeah, so one of the challenges I had was I wouldn't really want to go to the Microsoft conference in July back in Vegas as well. And I always get it mixed up. But is it Inspire or Ignite?
Correct. That is the partner one is Inspire. That's in July, yeah.
Yeah, so my challenge was, which one do I go to? And I contacted them directly and I said, you know, sell me on why I would choose this over the other one. And they basically said that it's all about pre sort of sales versus post sales. So the SharePoint conference, it's not just SharePoint. They talk a lot about Power Apps, a lot about Flows, and then obviously SharePoint and Teams. But it's more after you've got it. So, okay, you've made the investment. Now what do you do? Whereas I think the conference in July is a little bit more pre, like, what, sell me on why I would get these items, and then that journey right through to post. So that was sort of why I chose to go to this one this year. I think next year I would like to go to this one, but it would be a luxury as well, of course, going once. And again, it depends on the environment of the products. So we sort of are anticipating lots of change at the moment. That may settle down next year, so there may not be it may be a different sort of a style of conference, but I'd love to potentially go to the other one next year and then maybe alternate them like that.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting thing. Hopefully we can look at doing that going forward. Now, apart from the conference, one of the questions I'd like to talk to you about is obviously the women in tech question. So obviously you've gone to SharePoint. SharePoint as a community generally has a bit of a better gender balance, I suppose, than most technical things. I mean, how did you find that? How did you find the mood and sort of that sort of environment when you went over there?
It's funny though, I've never sort of really made a big distinction of the equality or the gender sort of distribution in the industry, but obviously yes, by default it's a lot more male dominated. But yeah, I did see a lot of women, and a lot of women on the more technical side. So you know, in the developer sessions there were quite a lot of women in there, but I felt, yeah, it was very very equal. Everything was really well done. And Microsoft have a really big push on the whole equality space in general. So they ran a couple of sessions, particularly around women in tech and particularly around that diversity and that conversation. They were a little bit high level for me to get involved in, but they definitely had those on offer. And I felt, yeah, I felt really comfortable and, excited and happy to be there. So, no, it was really good.
Included, basically. So there wasn't this sort of, yeah, us and them sort of environment at all.
No, that's right.
Good. Okay. All right. So at the moment, after attending the conference, coming back, hopefully getting the body clock adjusted and digesting some of this information, what's sort of exciting you about what's happening in the world of Office 365 and SharePoint, especially going forward for the next 12 months? You know, what sort of things are you looking forward to deliver to your customers?
Look, I think at a high level, it's just the confidence that the solution is just definitely going to get better. I mean, one of the things that they were talking about was the turbocharging of SharePoint and, you know, like, faster downloads, quicker performance, better search, more file type extension previewing, faster indexing and that sort of stuff. So that was the comforting thing, is just knowing that it's just going to get better. So that was great. And I mean, of course, that's a natural evolution, but it was just seeing examples of that, seeing them run, you know, one of the key things they announced was this differential saving. Yep. Yeah, syncing. Yep. And so to see them on conference Wi-Fi open a 2.5 gigabyte document and make a change and see that within 5 seconds save successfully,
it's impressive,
back,
isn't it? Yeah.
It was just like, wow, okay. Because that's something, as anyone that knows me, and, you know, you're the same, I always am saying don't sync. It's ridiculous. But, I mean, if people really decide that that's what they want to do and if that's the only choice they have with some particular items, then I feel less concerned for them now. I feel like that, you know, it's going to be okay if that's really what they need to do. Then seeing them go through the new search results cards and the information it pulls through and connecting into external sources and bringing that into the search results. And, yeah, just that was really exciting and great to see. And then, of course, the previews of AutoCAD and some of those other file types.
I think it's a really good indication now that SharePoint and Teams and everything that depends on SharePoint these days, which is a lot of Office 365 stuff, is now, like I say, hitting this turbocharge button. It's really built that base. It's become much more stable, much more usable. And now Microsoft is not resting on its laurels. It's continuing to add and improve the look and the feel, the differential sync, the search, as you mentioned, and the product's just becoming, you know, stronger and stronger and stronger and a much better option for many businesses. And I think that, again, there's going to be a lot of opportunity in that space for people to go down the SharePoint path like you have. Now, if somebody wanted to do that or they're thinking about, you know, I want to get away from traditional tech and, you know, fixing stuff that breaks and reinstalling Windows 10, and I want to get into this wonderful world of, you know, SharePoint and what it can do and what I can provide to customers in that space, what sort of guidance would you give people? Where should they start? What should they start looking at to sort of, you know, get some feel for what SharePoint can actually do if they've never, you know, used it before?
Well, you know, I always think it starts with what problem are you solving to make you actually trial the product. So, you know, I got introduced to it just because that was my job. You know, I had to figure it out and I had to learn how to better manage the documentation using SharePoint. But, you know, for those that are wanting to just test it out and trial it, obviously you can get a Office 365 for Business, you know, trial, but, you know, most people would already have some sort of access to it anyway. But I would just start by, you know, find a use case, like go, okay, well, I'm using Dropbox now to share these files externally. And that's a really common one, even with tech, is people are like, okay, that's easy. Now, you just have to jump into SharePoint, click the SharePoint icon, create a site, or go to the default site and drag and drop some files into a document library and test out the sharing of the links and how easy it is to work with and start to use that. I think the thing with this stuff is, particularly my experience, because I'm not technical first, is people like to see that leading by example. One of the biggest problems is if people are trying to get involved with this, but they're not using it themselves, it's kind of a big red cross. And it just makes people, I guess, not believe in the story that you're trying to sell. So you've got to use it. You've got to know it from a user's perspective. You can't just sort of say, yeah, this is cool and this works. So I think getting in and giving it a go and clicking around and playing with it is the best place to start. And I know that sounds really ridiculous, but I mean, I am in business because IT companies don't do this well. So, you know, there is, as you said, there are so many opportunities for businesses to get better equipped with these features.
Yeah, I think, again, that's the key here. The key here is to look at SharePoint as a tool like Excel, Word, PowerPoint. You open it, it's effectively blank. You build your own intelligence, you build it the way you want, and then a couple of weeks later, you can change it, you can bold it, you can underline it, you can make it do anything that you want. So I think that's the value add here, is you can add your own IP, you can add your own environment, obviously, to solve business problems. That's where the value is for customers. But you're right. I think at the end of the day, you've got to live the dream. You've actually got to use it. And again, it's going to start off feeling a bit clunky and a bit strange initially. And how do I do this? And where's this button? But a lot of us, I think, in the SharePoint space have generally learnt by trial and error, then gone and done a bit of work and a bit of study and then added a bit more and grown it out from there. And it's pretty rapid development now. You can get up to speed, I think, very quickly. And like you said, I think the best way is to immerse yourself in it and start using it. Then you've got a much better feel for it. Office 365 now gives us a much better platform to work from, both visually and also functionally, and it just keeps improving. So I think that's, again, a big reason for people to go in and dive in and start using it. And as you say, most people probably already have a tenant already that they can play around with. They just haven't invested the time looking at it. So again, we'll certainly encourage people to do that as you suggested. All right. So again, we appreciate your time giving us some of that feedback on the conference and on SharePoint in general. If people want to get in contact with you or ask any additional questions or wave to you on the socials, what's the best way for them to do that?
I think probably, what they should be doing is getting involved in the CIA Ops patron group. But my virtual, so mivirtual.com.au, I've done a blog summary on the conference releases. I sort of do updates there. They can get in touch with me through there or on the socials, mivirtual on Facebook or Insta. Really, it's just reaching out, even LinkedIn directly, Mia McIntyre. There's not that many of me. More than happy to have a chat with people about it. I mean, we're all learning and everything's an evolution in this industry. So I really think that as much as you can do something day in and day out, the rapid change makes us all, novices. I don't think anyone can be a real expert unless... there's some sort of time lapse in the changes, which isn't the case. Everything's moving so quickly. So we're all there to help each other.
Yeah, I think that's the secret too, is the community. That's the big takeaway from SharePoint. I think SharePoint's got a fantastic community around it. There are so many people who are so passionate about the product and really want it to do well and can really step up and help you. That's one of the big benefits I saw when I went to a SharePoint conference a number of years ago. There are just so many people out there willing to help and give you ideas, give you motivation, and again, solve business problems. And now we've got so many more tools, including Flow, Power BI and whatnot. So lots of opportunity for people there, whether you want to get into building it, developing it, or basically architecting it. So lots of options there. And I'll make sure that all those links are available in the show notes for this episode so that you can, again, have a chat to Mia if you want to get some more confirmation or some more detail on either the conference or the role that she plays for customers. But I will take this opportunity to thank Mia very much for her time and her knowledge. And again, we will let you know about any updated events that are coming. And as Mia says, the best place to keep in touch with her on a regular basis is the CIA Ops Patron Group. And again, Mia, thank you very much for being on this episode.
Thanks, Robert. Have an awesome afternoon.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.